The views and opinions expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WPRK, its management, or employees
like
of Bones College.
It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Broken glass everywhere, people pissing on the fridge, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise, got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room, roaches in the back, junkies in the alley with the baseball bat. I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far, cause a man with a tow truck repossessed my car. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head.
Hey, good afternoon, Winter Park, and welcome to another edition of Punkonomics here at WPRK Winter Park, Florida, the voice of Rollins College and the Best in Basement Radio. And here's the host of our show, Dr. Benjamin Ballack.
Hello.
Yeah, that was loud.
Was it?
And my name is Jesse Velez. I'm the co-host, and today we have a lot of topics to cover, so we're going to get right into it. Dr. Ballack, if you want to do the introductions, please.
Sure. Well, first of all, I mean, the topic, you know, the inevitable, we talk about it many times in different ways, in different contexts, so I don't know. Obviously, we have to plunge into what's going on, you know, the uprising, as some call it, in Baltimore. And, you know, as often this show goes, we'll take it to context. So we'll connect things. We'll look at the big picture. And we have no idea where we're going to go with it exactly. Well, some idea, I think. I've put a torrent of posts, some of which surely inappropriate. On punkonomics.org, which is our hub, from which you find all our tentacles, you know, spreading wherever they spread.
And I'm so happy you take care of that blog, because if I wrote down what's on my mind, sometimes we'll probably get shot.
You have to sometimes take a deep breath. I do. I've learned to take a deep breath, right? It's part of my job sometimes, right, to take a deep breath. If I, yeah, you know, I mean, sometimes late at night when we plan things or we just hang out, you know, you know what I think, and you know that sometimes what I think emotionally is, you know, I can't say out loud. After all, I am in the process of getting my American citizenship.
You know, I try to take a deep breath, but my doctor says to take medication, and of course, with this health care, what can I say?
Yeah, I've been put on medication, but I refuse the happy pills. I'll just be angry, thank you very much.
Happy pills don't work.
Maybe, I don't know. But anyway, definitely not happy pills right now. So with us today, we have, first of all, we have a regular, you know, I'm proud to call my colleague here, Miguel Adams, from Speak Up Florida. And he's been here several times. And the last time you were reporting from Tampa, from the 15-1, over the phone. And we have two special guests with us today, which I'll let you, like, just, you know, say who you are, tell us what you want us to, what you want the listeners to know about you, and we'll take it from there.
My name is Sophia Glover. I work for Organize Now. I am an activist. I just want us to basically see how we can stand in solidarity with what's going on in Baltimore.
Definitely. Yeah, that's the topic.
Hi, on Facebook, you'll find me as Apostle Robin Harris. Robin is fine. I have recently launched a community here, Spiritual Temple of Diversity and Awakening. And hopefully today we can talk about how to create space for spirituality, social justice, and unity, even though in this time it seems like it's rough. But maybe spirit and faith and justice can meet and we can find some common unity.
Yeah, I saw that. I mean, when we became Facebook friends yesterday, was it? Right?
Yes.
Yesterday is a blur for me. I was like grading from 8 a.m. Okay. to like 10 p.m. I'm blitzing it.
So Baltimore, yeah. I just got to say one thing really quick about the whole Baltimore thing.
Take it off your chest. We'll have plenty of time. We've got hours of
event. You know how I feel about the media, and the media is a big problem in this country because they control pretty much everything. And what bothers me is that, and of course, you know, I shouldn't say my favorite because I just can't stand it, but Fox News. Mm. I mean, they've been getting on for the whole day saying, oh, the Crips, the Bloods, and the Black Gorillas, which I've never heard about, are the ones destroying, you know, Baltimore and all that, while all the other news media is basically reporting is that there is some protest and there are some people getting out of hand. And it just seems to me that with all this sensationalism, they're just making the problems even worse because people are angry out there. And, you know, some of them are just cause, you know, they're angry, but they're not destroying stuff. The ones that are destroying, you're going to have a little bit of that. You know, so you can't really blame a whole crowd of protesters for a few idiots out there that, you know, are just destroying stuff because they want to do that.
I could go, I mean, man, you spread a lot of interesting, we're thinking on the same wavelengths here. I say, I totally understand the violence too. I mean, I think in fact, I'll go further. I'll say that we wouldn't be talking about it. Nobody would be talking about it. Nobody would be hearing about it. The fact that there's tens of thousands of people peacefully marching, very respectably, nobody would listen to, and a few people got angry for very good reasons. And in fact, there's good evidence to show that they were actually egged on and harassed to the point where eventually they lost it. This is one of the oldest, disgusting ploy that dictatorships and power elites have used. I mean, enough's enough. So, I'm going farther than you are on this. I mean, it's not, while maybe, like we learned from Rivera's son, maybe nonviolent civil disobedience is the most long-term kind of effective strategy to bring change, but I come back, as I argued with her on the air, that there is no progress without. And you know what? Let me quote from a great dead man, shall we?
Go for it.
Just to kind of, you know, to give us gravitas before we go crazy. So that man I want to quote is Frederick Douglass in a speech in 1857. I posted that on the blog too. I posted a bunch of stuff, right? The whole history of the progress of human liberty shows that all concessions yet made to her august claims have been born of earnest struggle. If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Mm-hmm. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet deprecate agitation are men who want crops without plowing up the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning. Find out just what any people will quietly submit to, and you have found out the exact measure of injustice and wrong which will be imposed upon them. And these will continue till they are resisted with either words or blows, or with both. If we ever get free from the oppression and wrongs heaped upon us, we must pay for their removal. We must do this by labor, by suffering, by sacrifice, and if need be, by our lives and the lives of others.
Mm-hmm.
So just reminding, you know, people, many people are patriots. Many of our listeners call themselves not progressive, in fact, but in fact, libertarian. And I want to tell you that if you are not outraged right now, if you are not with the, we can argue about tactics, all right, but in spirit, with those kids breaking stuff up, then you're no libertarian. You're a stooge of power.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Dr. King said that rioting is the language of the unheard. Mm. And, you know, these young kids have been ignored since day one. You know, there's a lack of opportunities in oppressed communities, jobs, after school programs, and then put on top of that the oppression, the brutality that the state institution delivers through the police department. They deliver it through other venues too, you know, through the DCF department, Department of Children and Family, you know, of cutting food stamps, of minimum wage that are being paid in these communities, sometimes single mothers because the father has been mass incarcerated, you know. So all this equation need to be put in place, you know, and there's a point in which people won't be able to take it anymore, and that's what we're seeing in Baltimore. And by the way, we saw in Ferguson, and by the way, we could see here in Orlando. You know, and we could see it again somewhere else, because it's bound to repeat. So for as community leaders, we have to be brainstorming and preparing for that. Of course, one does not want to advocate and see young people being massacred in the street by National Guard, by the National Guard and police officer. So how do we become proactive to avoid situations like these in our communities.
Which, by the way, it's getting close to the anniversary of Kent State. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you remember back then, it was the same thing. Economic demise of the poor and the middle class. Yeah. No work.
Yes.
You know, we were basically at war.
Right.
And our government saying that, you know, if you're not with us, mm-hmm. then you're with them.
Right.
You know, and it's the same thing. History repeats itself
yeah.
over and over again. And the problem that I see with today is that we have so much technology and so much media that there's no way that the common Joe knows who's right or who's wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, all they see is destruction, you know, property being burned to
Dude,
the ground.
Never mind
and stuff
the
like
common
that.
Joe, you know what I mean? I mean, on the contrary, it's not, you know, education doesn't help you here.
No, it doesn't.
On the contrary, maybe. Yeah. In many ways, actually, I find that education maybe numbs you to it.
No,
just
yeah.
gives you a whole bunch of excuses. Yeah. But again, we can argue about the tactics. It's not really, I think, the focus, though. If you want to take it there, that's fine by me. Anything goes. But the notion of this kind of disparaging that it's counterproductive or that it's somehow wrong, what the president always used that counterproductive term. Same thing he uses for all the freedom movement or any other person in power all over the world.
Well, it's kind of productive for the people who have all the businesses and the money. Yeah, you know, they're the ones losing.
Well,
we're already
yet,
lost.
Not yet.
We don't have anything really to rely on.
That's
I
right.
mean, our social status is plummeted down. I mean, you know, I don't know which level of the economy I fall into. I know I'm not middle class anymore, and I definitely know that I'm poor, but, you know, how further down the rabbit hole do I go? I don't know,
yes.
you know. And people like me are out there, you know, upset, and they don't have no way to vent. There are community leaders, you know, they're preoccupied with other stuff. There are political leaders. Who knows where they're at? And then you have an oppressive force like the police force,
right.
you know. And I'm not saying that all police are bad, no. because I do have family who are policemen who try to do the right thing.
No.
But when you get to the point where you're not heard,
yeah.
and you're being beaten up just because of the color of your skin or because of the neighborhood that you work at, you know, you live in,
yes.
then you have to fight back. You know, I don't advocate the violence, but they have to see that, you know, it's not all good in Mayberry.
Yeah.
They forget the humanity part of it.
Right.
This is what gets to me. They look at the fact that, oh, this guy's been to jail umpteen number of times. He's a career criminal. Does that mean he's not human? Does that mean he doesn't feel? Does that mean he does not deserve to be treated with respect? Is that what that means? I mean, you have some rich people who've been to jail. You know, you don't hear about it.
And the richest who haven't, though they
yeah.
should be.
okay. But
Absolutely.
You don't hear about it. But you don't stereotype them because they went to jail. They can cover it up.
Right.
We can't. You know? I mean, it's like once they label you, there is no taking that label off. There is no taking it off. It's going to stick with you wherever you go. I mean, you can't get a place to live. Nobody wants to hire you, not with a decent job. Okay, work at McDonald's, Burger King somewhere. How do you make ends meet there? Okay, you throw them in prison. Yeah, I mean, you know, you throw them in prison. They can't. They may learn a trade, but when they come out, if someone will hire them, okay, or they can't go to school. Unless you go to school in prison.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's like everything they say that's in place to help better them, it's really not bettering them. You know, and then they dehumanize them. They dehumanize us. They really do. I'm a convicted criminal. Okay. I'm a convicted felon. I am. Okay. For driving. I can't get a place to live. Homeowners Association don't care about why mm-hmm. I'm a convicted felon. They don't care. I work every day. I make a decent wage. They don't care.
Yeah, right. That's a lot of things. It's like either you are or you aren't, and that gives you but economically, it's like a very cynical system that really, I mean, it screws you over on purpose. I mean, not that there's a cabal of people somewhere sitting in the room, somewhere in a, you know, figuring out how to, but it ends up pretty much, maybe there is, frankly. Sometimes you wonder.
Something that you said earlier, I support the anger, something that you said, what Frederick Douglass said. If we can find a way to create a type of balance, because the anger, I support the anger. I understand the emotions. But we can rise above the stigma by doing something, proactive, as Miguel and I were talking about earlier. And there were three words that came to my mind. If we can educate, if we're rioting or creating a rebellion or a revolution. And a revolution is more planned because we're thinking economics, we're thinking education, we're thinking about the future, because right now we have a lot of reaction going on. Mm-hmm. Understood, but is it really getting us anywhere? Is it really helping the situation? So if we can come together, we can become common and learn how to create a proactive rebellion. And because the other thing that's being fought, if we just march and if we pray, we're called coons. Okay, so that doesn't make us feel good. Then the other extreme is, now that we are looting and we're doing the blows, now we're called terrorists or extremists. So if we can find a balance to bring about some positive change, that will at least make me feel better.
Yeah. And I totally agree. We have to create that proactivity. Proactiveness within our community, and that's why we are building a movement here. Speak of Florida, movement to end Jim Crow. I was listening to Michelle Alexander. I posted a very short video on Speak of Florida, and she was mentioning something as to we need to have a long-term organization or organizing, long-term organizing. And as you put it as a rebellion or revolution, but at the end of the day, it's a movement. You know, it has to be comprehensive because of this would not, I mean, we could use this to our advantage because obviously is the venting of writing is legitimate. You know, only somebody who wants to bring up fallacious argument, you know, could say it's not legitimate. It is legitimate. You know, these young kids, they are reacting to the status quo. But as a community organizer from the community of colors, we have a responsibility now, as Sister Robin says, to go and educate these young people in order to bring them into a comprehensive movement and use that energy in a very more positive ways. Because at the end of the day, many of the stores might belong to somebody's uncle, you know, who's struggling, right. Small body, and so on. You know, we understand that, but at the end of the day, there's going to be some damage during our reconstructing all this. So we're not going to advocate for that, but at the same time, we're not even going to condemn them because we understand what the problem, the root cause of the problem. So as community leaders, I think our responsibility is to build and create that rebellion, a movement, and guide it in a very structured way. You know? And Michelle Alexander mentioned that as to organizing.
That's bang on. I mean, that's exactly what you guys were saying. I mean, that's exactly what differentiates, you know, failed and successful revolutions in history. And the revolution, again, doesn't necessarily involve violence and pitchfork.
Right.
Well, to some extent, always. At least a threat, at least some kind of show of force. But it doesn't have to, it's not a bloodbath. I mean, very rarely they even have, there were revolutions. Most famously is the British Glorious Revolution, non-violent. At least not, you know, in any massive sense. But it does mean a significant overall change. I mean, you need that anger, you need that energy, but you're absolutely right that if you just allow it to run uncontrolled, then, like, think of the French Revolution. Overall, I know, of course, what are we taught in history classes? That it was a failure. Excuse me. You know, it was a humongous, one of the greatest punctuation points in history. Were there some things that didn't work out nicely? Yeah, when they started, well, after the revolution was done, the goals were accomplished to a large extent. Then they kind of turned on each other with a lot of nasty internal politics and violence went out of control. But again, the world was a different place after that revolution and invariably for the better.
Yeah, a riot is not even close. It's not even close to a revolution. It's just a reaction of this.
It's one event within a revolution.
Yeah,
revolution takes a long time too.
So what we have to do is take momentum of this, educate, empower these young people and older people to have a lexicon. I don't know if I pronounced that lexicon. In order to to vent their ways and organize in different ways, you know, these different manners. You know, sometimes they go even through art, you know. Through Malcolm X said, by any means necessary. And,
It's a multiple, all different art is very important, actually. Of course, in American context, in current American context, in African American struggle, hip hop obviously immediately comes to mind. And will it be co-opted by rich males? Of course. But you keep fighting, right? You keep fighting and lose and get up, fight again. Easier said than done. But that's how it's done.
What Gail, what he's to kind of piggyback, and I think our community leaders, whether they be faith based or political, I think they should show up before something happens.
Nice.
They should be approachable before there's a bloodbath or before. No one's approachable until something happens. Mm-hmm. And so they don't want to hear their sermons. They don't want to hear what they have to say because you weren't there before the struggle happened or before there was an indication that something was going to happen. You weren't there. You were too busy, being in church or staying being the church. Yes, exactly.
But that's what organized now. That's basically that's our goal, is to organize communities.
Wonderful.
To give them, to help them have a voice, to make public officials accountable for their actions. Mm-hmm. If the public officials were more in tune to what the people's needs were instead of what fat in their pockets, big corporations, things would be a lot better. It really would.
Then we'd have democracy.
Ta-da.
Right. And you hit it on the nail. I mean, we basically have to get our leaders to get a little bit more proactive and organize a little bit better. Because as you know, in the 60s and the 70s, the one thing that we look at that is, you know, in common is that all the states, there was something happening in every state. You know, and at one point, you know, the people upstairs, the government were going like, well, okay, we need to address the problem, and do something about it. Where we failed was that, you know, once we did all the marches, you know, in the 60s and the 70s, and things started looking like it was changing, then everybody dropped the ball and went to sleep. And that cannot happen again because, you know, we're not gonna be looked at as being a viable group of people, you know. And that's the problem that I have sometimes with a lot of our leaders is that, you know, they advocate this, they advocate that, and, you know, let's all get together and let's march down the street and all that, but then 2 or 3 weeks later, it's over. You know, and then
it's happening again. You know what I mean? Uncharacteristically, we're not yet in a half hour of the show, and we are going to be positive, right? I mean, it is happening like since the late 60s, you know, and then sure, it turned into a kind of a nightmare in the early 70s, didn't it? And back into law and order, but then maybe we'll have to go through it again and again. That's another thing historically, right? People memorize dates they teach us in schools. They think, 1989, the storming of the Bastille, French Revolution. And now, it's not until like the 90s, so 10 years later, where really things happen. That was kind of a freak and pretty insignificant event that happens to be the date they picked back then to throw a party. But these things take sometimes a whole generation, you know? So people were saying like, oh, Occupy was a failure. No, it was a huge success. It was a major success. And it doesn't happen overnight like that. Just the fact that people are talking in America, people don't remember, you couldn't talk. I mean, only socialists, I mean, not like communists were the only one talking about, and syndicanarchists, like me, were talking about income and wealth inequality in America. It was taboo, right? That put you into the radical left just to mention it. The I word or whatever, yeah, inequality. Now everybody's talking 99, 1%. So there's, people are paying attention. You know, I know, high school kids are looking at what's happening in Baltimore, and they're not like some of these really nasty. I mean, it's mostly over 65-year-old white racist people that watch Fox, so you shouldn't watch Fox too much. Fox is something for Jon Stewart to have fun with, frankly. I mean, it's pretty insignificant in many ways. I mean, it's so vile. I mean, it's like, it sounds to me, I'm a student of propaganda and a Jew from European origins. It's not even Klan language, what Fox is talking. It sounds, you know, it's funnier in German, people. I mean, it's like so the problem straight is, out of the playbook.
The problem is Joseph people believe
Goebbels
that stuff.
Here. They're beyond Klan.
People actually believe that stuff, which is the problem. And they do reach a lot of people.
Fewer and fewer. These are relatively baby boomers or, with pensions, you know, the generation that had, that could, can retire. Mm. They have time on their hands. They watch, but they're really insignificant and they vote.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they, it's a lingering thing, you know. I mean, when you look at demographics in America, you're actually pretty happy. Yeah. Americans are way more open-minded than the media portrayed them, way more progressive and even just straight out left-wing than the media. And then just to mark this and then we come back, this isn't a partisan issue. Once again, I mean, I kind of open about this. Any decent, you know, non-corrupt, non-inherently white supremacist piece of bleep should, that considers themselves a libertarian, should have absolutely no argument with us. On the contrary, they're the ones who are, like, particularly adamant about the police and, you know, and central authority and stuff like that, individual liberties.
I'd like to know, why was Mr. Gray's vocal cords crushed, you know? Why was his spine bent, severed? Mm-hmm. And like I said, I understand the outrage. And like you said, so who would not understand or who wouldn't be upset? That those are just questions that aren't being answered, or maybe they're not ready to answer them or deal with.
But you know, it's just, it's not just Mr. Gray.
Right. Sure.
You know,
that's
the problem that I have with this whole
thing. Thousands and thousands of people.
Yes.
It happens to a lot of people that are being unreported.
Hours. Yeah, right.
Yes.
And it's been going on for decades now.
Right. Yes.
Boston police have been sued and settled so many times for so many different.
Approximately $6 million.
So many different deaths. I mean, the mayor of Baltimore, wanted to have the police department reviewed over their methods because of so many complaints that they had. I mean, the mayor, she feels that there's a problem with the Baltimore police, the way that they're doing things, their tactics. Doesn't that speak out to somebody?
No. And like I said, it's going on for years, going on in different, I know Baltimore is a particularly bad place, but certainly not alone. New York, LA.
Yeah.
We can keep on rattling. It's a matter of degrees.
Detroit.
But now we're talking about it. So once again, I'm uncharacteristically positive about this, right? Yeah. I mean, this was going on. People were being beaten to death in the back of police trucks on a regular basis, but it never really made the news.
There was no cameras. So the media was low. The communication. Yeah. Now there's more people.
Even
today.
If you have a lot of white privileged guys, you know, like me, saying, well, no, law and order, we gotta keep those crazies out of my, you know, I'm in character here, right? You know me, keep, police needs to protect my property from these thugs. I mean, at least they're talking about it. When they start talking about it, there's a dialogue, and they have at least a chance of maybe getting the enlightened.
But the one thing that is consistent, and that's really the problem, is that every time we talk about it, every time we get the attention of our leaders, what do they do? Okay, so let's have the police chief do a review.
Yeah,
it's kind of like the criminals reviewing themselves on what they're doing.
Right. Yeah.
But they also, what the media does is look at the victim. They want to look at what he has done.
Uh-huh.
He's the one who's dead.
Right.
He's the one who got killed.
Family members are suffering.
Yes. I mean, that was somebody's child. Does that, I mean, I don't get it. I just don't get it. I don't understand it.
Yeah, whenever a white kid, like that white kid that shot at, like, girls, some kind of real crazy sexist nutter, you know, because they wouldn't sleep with him. And where was it? In Santa Barbara? Somewhere in California, I think.
Right.
A
couple
of years ago.
Laguna, I think.
So he was, whenever a white guy does something crazy like that, it's like, he's crazy. Right, he's got issues, he's messed up or something. Yeah. When a black kid gets, that's when the guy was shooting at innocent people, right? He's crazy.
Hey, you mean like
black
the Colorado
guy? Black guy gets gunned down, or that guy with the, right, with
the orange hair,
thing, yeah. So he's crazy. But when a black man doesn't shoot anybody, gets shot, then everybody kind of, he smoked some pot once. Oh, really? I'm shocked.
Yeah.
So what are we back in, like, reefer madness days? Yeah. I mean, you smoke pot, you become violent. You know, are we in the 30s?
You know, as you spoke, something came to my mind. There was this famous basketball coach, Bobby Knight. Bobby Knight, very famous back in the days.
I know Muhammad.
But they, and he was, taking the team in the Pan-American, they had the Pan-American Games in Puerto Rico, so it's back to the 80s. I was a teenager back then. I recall that things got hot in the basketball arena. And so the cops, you know, walked in, you know, into the arena. It was a real bad situation, you know. And he assaulted one of the cops and was caught in cameras. And they wanted to retain him. The people were saying, we want to retain this white person who comes here, you know, representing his country. They assaulted one of our police officers here. They didn't make news and everything, but nothing happened.
Of course.
And nothing happened, you know. He goes, you know.
Coach,
so,
I mean, it's a coach.
So far, and, God, right? And that's why I love Michelle Alexander. Because Michelle Alexander puts it in perspective. It's called white supremacy. Simple as that. Okay?
And it's a system. It's not an opinion of individuals.
Very good. And it's a system. And the reason it's called white supremacists is because it derives from there. You know, the culture of policing the runaway slaves. You know, of chasing down a runaway slave for a bounty. Michelle Alexander mentions in her book. You know, it starts right there. The history and the philosophy and the tradition of policing today departs from there. From that very moment that corporation, that plantation owner gave those poor whites 2 shotguns and a couple of hunts, go after the Negro that escaped from us. And that's the culture of the policing today. And those became the same sheriffs that were arresting the black people who were supposedly given freedom, and they had nowhere to go. And the first thing that the South did was, according to Michelle Alexander, in her book of history, was put vagrancy laws. So once they leave the plantation, under this time, they go back to the plantation under penalty of law because they had nowhere to go. They were poor. That's the same history and the same structure of the police that we have today.
All right. And Michelle Alexander's new Jim Crow does, I mean, a real study of this. Again, in the American context, one of the things that I really loved about that book when I read it is how it goes into the detail of the American experience. Something, you know, I learned academically a little bit, but you know, you learn academically is one thing, and then you come and live the place, you need to smell the place to really understand it a little bit better. But it's a whole long history.
Yeah.
Before
yeah.
Africa was raided and raped, this was going on in different, it's the weak, the poor, those who are in a disadvantage, are subjected to this sort of thing economically, and in America, of course, so yeah, I mean, poor whites, like, you know, the so-called white trash, rednecks, we can actually say that on the radio, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe we shouldn't. Maybe that should also be taboo language. Typically weren't the ones really making the money off the slaves, right?
The substitution of one system of oppression by for another.
Yeah, they also suffer, by the way, police brutality. Not at the same level, but, you know, rural poor whites also suffer. Not at the same level, no, but let's not compete, you know. That's where often it starts, that the good movements fall apart, where it's like, oh, whose rights are more important? Who's suffering more? Blacks, gays, women, you know, poor? Stop the competition. We need to fight it all together.
How haunting is it that it seems like this type of history keeps repeating itself? I was thinking, I guess maybe about 20 years ago or so, the Rodney King incident.
That was the last time we really had big riots, right? Help me out, because I was thinking about this morning.
Yes,
it's 2, 3, right? Something around there.
Yes, and we still have not solved the issue. Or the issues that caused that. Is it not safe to drive while black, or?
Oh yeah, and the numbers, I mean, okay, let's put it out there, right? I mean, the injustice is well documented. In the justice system, in the police system, in the schooling system. In 2 weeks we're supposed to have a program about how inherent racism is working in the school system, in the K-12 system. I got some school activists who are, you know, looking at that as part of, they were actually focusing primarily, we had all the opt-out people, we had them a few weeks back, and about the student rights and how, as they were looking at how this system is really doing a disservice to our kids in general, the high-risk testing and all that stuff, they kind of, I don't know if stumbled upon is the right thing, but they kind of fell upon and said, oh my God, look, once again, the whole system is screwing everybody over, but guess what? it's screwing people of color way worse. So we kind of thought that that would be a nice, nice maybe is not the right adjective, you know, a good topic for us to raise also in that context. But yeah, right, I mean, you know what you're thinking? One of the great revolutionaries of all times, who, according to family legend and some circumstantial evidence, is my great-great-uncle, is Leon Trotsky, the cousin of my grandmother on my mother's side. Same family name, same town, same place. That's all I got. And he's cool, right? Because he never got to, you know, Stalin, Stalin killed him eventually, so he never got to, maybe he would have been just as lousy as Stalin had he remained in power, but since he became a fugitive and had to run, at least there was no blood on his hands. So a guy that, you know, an interesting guy on so many levels, but he has a really puzzling concept in his writings called revolution and permanence. And you just explained it, just now. This notion that you just, it's the minute you stop this ongoing kind of non-violent, low energy or medium, whatever,
yeah, sure,
ongoing daily revolution. No, that's a problem. You know, if you're white, realize that you have a privilege. If you're male, realize that you have privilege. You know, do a little, you know, put yourself in other people's shoes every now and then. Just keep it going. You know, look at the policies, look at corruption, call it out. Keep pushing, pushing. The minute you stop pushing, you take your pills and you fire up the television. Not that there's anything wrong with taking your pills if you need to, or firing up the television at times, but not all the time, right? Then we fall back. Then it comes back. The cycle hits us again in the face and we lose ground.
Yeah.
So that's really the way I at least understand it. This revolution is not something, he theorized at least, is not like a day to, we topple over the power. Because everybody, or, well, a lot of people think, right, when we topple over an unjust power, all that comes to replace it is another system of power. And despite, you know, yeah, kind of true to a point, right? The thing is that you have to keep questioning all the time. You can't say, okay, I got these bastards out of the way, now I put the good guys in. Well, lo and behold, a couple of generations later, the good guys turn into the bad guys again. So, look today, the Tea Party, you know? I mean, the original Tea Party, the Boston Tea Party,
they're back.
They were vandalizing, you know? They were, in fact, destroying their own, whenever they say, oh, these people are destroying their own neighborhoods. How stupid is that? I'm saying, oh yeah, just like the Boston Tea Party. They were,
right.
Similar thinking.
You know, and the narrative, unfortunate, because there's some individuals out there that have, which I call ambulance chasers, that come in with their entourage, and they already have a red phone with all this cable news of, and they come and take the narrative away from the community. And I'm talking to individuals like Al Sharpton and individuals like, Benjamin Jealous is not there around anymore, but he was another one, with the NAACP, you know, that would just show up, you know, and the grassroots, individuals that were there, that are there always in the community, will lose the narrative to the, you know, to the press. Then there's no more, there's, they take charge. They,
celebrities.
That, yeah, celebrities, yeah. You know, ambulance chasers. And I think these are agents, doesn't surprise me. We had less than a year ago that Al Sharpton was working for the FBI and wiretapping the mafia. So it doesn't.
Well, maybe rumors. Who knows?
No, it came out. The document came out after 25 years of secrecy, and he admitted it. Yeah, so it's out there. It's out there. It's something which he admits himself that he did. You know, he said he was trying to protect the community, you know, from the drug elements of the mafia and so on. So he was cooperating and so on.
Yeah.
So
and maybe he got entrapped and stuff. I mean, whatever. I'm not here to defend Al Sharpton.
I've lost a lot. I'm from Brooklyn. I've known Al Sharpton. I grew up seeing Al Sharpton. I've seen him shrink, and I've seen him get
literally
too. I saw him get rich too. I'm from Brooklyn. I'm from Brooklyn. I've seen him in person. I had shook his hands and numerous times. That's the problem that individuals in Brooklyn, in Manhattan, that are there in the community, doing the work in the community, and then there's something going on, then comes all this entourage, you know, and they steal the narrative. And I don't think that that is the reason I mentioned the FBA case in which he was working for them. It doesn't surprise me that he's an agent to neutralize the struggle, to neutralize the struggle, so the struggle won't move on, you know, and
he doesn't even have the excuse. I mean, you know, the president is the president, so he's, you know, he's in a rotten system, so he has to. I'm sure everybody cringes when we hear him say what he has to say, but maybe he has some kind of excuse that, well, you know, he has to, because that's part of the job. But Al Sharpton was never like that. I mean, why didn't he stay? Maybe it's, you know, when you become a celebrity, you become rotten almost invariably. I think also
it's like when you look at the NAACP, Al Sharpton, those guys come from a whole different, in a sense, era. Their message hasn't really changed. There's different methods that are needed now. You know, versus then, and I think so now they're kind of glamorizing, they're taking some chances to maybe to become a celebrity because they don't really have anything new to say.
I think they just become part of the establishment, you know, that part of that 1%. Simple as that. There's such society, you know, they eat caviar for breakfast. Is that true? I've heard something like that. So, so they become part of that 1%. Which is controlled really by these corporations, you know, in which he broadcasts from, you know, and so on. So, individuals like us that are there out on the street daily, you know, working with our communities, you know, become pretty much neutralized by individuals like this, you know, and that's where the funding goes. That's where they take all the funding from the foundation, from the donors, and so on. And small organizations like ours that are grassroots get the crumbs.
Yeah, if you want to be a member of the country club, you have to play by the country club rules, essentially. So they do.
No, that's what our organization basically does. We are, as of right now, we are organizing people out of the community to get, and some have decided that they want more programs for the youth, so that kids can have something to do besides be bored and to get in trouble. The response time, these are some, it's just a few issues that they have in the communities that I'm hitting. The response time of the police. The fact that there are no programs that are free, for your kids, but in other areas, well-to-do areas, they have every program you can imagine that's free for the kids. But in the areas in which I canvass every day, they're not free, you know, and then the ones that are free, they fill up so fast. There's a waiting list so long. One lady told me the kids play Russian roulette with the cars in the neighborhood. I mean, because they come through speeding. We're organizing people who want speed bumps in their neighborhoods just to slow people down. These things the county don't want to give. Organize Now has got to work with these people to help them in order to get the changes in their community that they want. And the only reason why they don't have them is because of their zip code.
That's right.
And that's not fair.
It's not right.
Well, fair. I mean, again, to be right, it's absolutely not fair. In some sense, it's always the case, though, right? I mean, you get the protection from the government and the law and what all its institutions, basically in line with how much you pay, you know, what your economic value is.
But they pay taxes just like everybody else. They work just like everybody else.
Of course.
Everybody who lives on Mercy Drive or in Pine Hills,
property taxes.
I mean, don't survive off drug money. You know, you got hardworking people out there.
But I guess you don't give a how many thousands of dollars a year do you give to the campaign of the mayor or you know?
Exactly. Yeah. But we're trying to mobilize these people to make them vocal. Yeah. You know, to go down to the county commission, to go to the mayor's office, to do whatever it takes to get the response that they need. There's no reason why if I'm on Mercy Drive and I call the police and it takes them 30 minutes to get to me because I didn't mention I had a gun. If I was over here in Winter Park and called the police, I have police reaction in no time.
No time.
I mean, where's the justice in that? Yeah. Where's that right at?
So you have to just annoy the hell out of them in some sense.
You
just
gotta
be a thorn in their side all the time in order to get some kind of attention. If you do rape, and that goes all the way back to the idea that whatever we think about looting and violence, we wouldn't be even talking about it if everybody was marching respectfully and, out in Baltimore.
No.
It wouldn't have made the news, right? On the margin of some alternative media. So there, if nothing else, that looting and violence, even though it clearly, attracts unfair and often lying attention, because there's a tremendous amount of evidence that shows that it was very peaceful and they were attacked by sports fans, right? And so that this was again a response to some kids that really kind of wouldn't take the abuse anymore. That started the more violent action. But again, I mean, they have performed a service, like it or not. But property is God, right? So
here it's
it's the nature of the beast, right? Those who fund the campaign of the police commissioner and the politicians, have a lot of property and they are, and this is good news, afraid, you know, of riots.
I think it was Martin Luther King or someone said riots are the voices of the unheard. So it's, I guess you're saying, can you hear me now?
Yeah. And it's everywhere like that. It's everywhere. It's from Gaza to everywhere, you know? I mean, it can rattle out places. You have nothing to lose. You're miserable. When you behave nicely for a long time, nice and politely, nobody gives
you attention.
Nothing. So you're going to do something, even if what you get is slapped. But maybe you get some attention. It's a very natural reaction of any reasonable human being. It's not unreasonable.
I'm just concerned as to where do we go now? Because it's, as you said, the issues are global. Mm-hmm. If you're in a certain caste or a certain class or structure, you're not going to be heard. And so we have these upheavals, uprisings. Detroit, I think it was last year, there were two brothers who were profiled and followed into a Coney's like little restaurant. Long story short, the two brothers, they fought.
Yeah.
And they were, one was a law student and the other is a criminal justice student. Of course, those charges were dropped. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they made a mistake. They messed with the wrong guy,
to
speak.
Thank God that there were cameras to their benefit too.
Yes.
To their benefit. You know, when the cops went in there from the very beginning, they're tailgating them, you know, and then they go, once they go into the restaurant, the cops get out of the car, go inside the restaurant, and tell the guy, let me see your ID. You know, and that, so the whole process of the car, a police car following him into the parking lot, you know, and previous to that, the cop had mentioned something to the young man.
Yeah, what did you say? You got something to say?
You got something to say, So it was very, you know, if it wasn't because it was caught like that, you could imagine this young man.
Yes, they would have been in careers right over. Now.
And you know how much time they would give you for assaulting a Leo, a law enforcement?
Yes.
You know, I got a friend who, some years back here and fought back. They go 12 years. 12 years. 12 years. Yeah, with his hands and fought back and they go 12 years.
And that's not new. I have a friend of mine, this is back in the '80s. I was at a Talking Heads concert and he went to buy a t-shirt. He gives the concessionaire $100, right? The guy literally rips him off from the change. So after talking to the concierge supervisor, you know, he didn't have a place to go to, you know, argue about, you know, getting his money back. All of a sudden, Hillsboro sheriff comes up, hits him. A friend of his sees what's going on, jumps in, tries to separate them. All of a sudden, it turns into a big brawl. They both winded up going to jail for a year and a half and 5-year probation.
Wow. It's amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the guy was being beaten to a pulp just for having a little sign that was saying the concessionaire guy is a ripoff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the police is generally not accountable.
Yeah. Right.
Certainly not accountable to the community that they police. And there's discussion of different types about reforming the police rather dramatically.
But they need to. They do what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
They're never found to be wrong. Mm-hmm. They're always justified. And they get a darn vacation afterwards.
Right.
I mean, really.
Paid leave, you know?
Paid leave.
Tell me, who do I need to, you know, abuse in order to get some paid leave?
I mean, it's a job to have nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah.
A point, I'm going to call him my nephew. Again, in Michigan, he's graduated from the Academy of Law Enforcement, young black guy. He was witnessing an incident that involved police and other young adults. And they asked him to leave, and he replied, "I have every right to be here."
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, they had no idea that he was part of law enforcement. They jailed him for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he got out, of course, now there's this, they are afraid.
Mm-hmm.
So there needs to be realignment, restructuring, reformation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's global.
Right.
Yeah.
This is on national levels. So it makes you think you know, are we under siege, martial law? What's going on?
And it's not just local law enforcement. It's pretty much corporations and all that. I have to say, I witnessed a situation with an African American gentleman at work at Brand X company, because I can't really talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I stood up because I was questioned what I was going to say. And then all of a sudden, from being Mr. Bright, nice, you know, potentially supervisor going up the chain, I became, you know, nobody. And when it came down to go to court and I was supposed to testify, then they really clamped down on me. So personally, I think it's more about the people in power. They try to cover up as much as they can. And that's the same thing that you have in law enforcement as well as in City Hall.
Yeah.
They try to cover it up because they know there's liability. And then you have people, I mean, I'm still not afraid of stepping forward.
Sure.
You know, actually now I'm even more angrier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I would step forward any time. But then people that would normally step forward and say, hey, this is wrong, are afraid now because they'll lose their jobs, you know, they'll lose their status in the community, and then all of a sudden, you know, they go down a spiral staircase.
Sure.
And things get really bad. So
it turns into
one great
big prison. I mean, there's some like the first class of the prison and the bottom dungeon of the prison, and they're very different, of course, but it's all this kind of surveillance, punishment, behave as you're supposed to.
Yeah, this whole thing about the whistleblowers.
Right.
I mean, every whistleblower, you know, so far since they started that, has gotten the wrong end of the stick, literally.
And
corporations and government everywhere. You know, Snowden, whistleblower, you know, many people that come forward wind up in the wrong end of the stick.
But General Petraeus, just for giving up your secrets.
Yeah, he gives national secrets to his girlfriend.
He got a year probation.
Right.
And a fine of $100,000.
And an offer to give lectures in State University of New York.
Yeah, they don't want him there.
He's one of the boys.
He's
one of the boys.
Exactly.
And that's, you know, it brings me to this little triangle. And I mean, you know, during Occupy, there was something that really hit me. And I said, wait a minute. You know, I was right there in New York. And I saw how the police protected all these buildings in downtown Manhattan, where all these big corporations have their headquarters and so on during Occupy. And even after their hours of work, that will go and get hired by the same corporations that they were
banks,
protecting.
Yeah.
Yes, so mm-hmm. the banks, yeah,
the guys who took $6 trillion of taxpayer
that
money
that ruined the economy. And so
talk about looting, by the way.
So don't you find this triangle kind of interesting? Mm-hmm. Suppose that the police unions would have just be upset because now their cops are being convicted. Okay, suppose that starts to happen, all right? And we have another Occupy. Could the cops look the other way? All right? And therefore, you know, so we see that these corporations, these triangle corporations give money to politicians. Police protect the corporations and protect the politicians. If we dissent to right. Capitol Hill or to any Capitol or to City Hall, who's going to protect them? So it's obvious that there's something going on here where there's got to be some kind of, you know, maybe unspoken deal. Hey, this is how the people are going to protect us, who protected us on Wall Street. If we piss off, we saw how the union gave the back to de Blasio during the funeral.
And he really didn't do anything, you know? I wish he did more.
He just told his son to be careful.
Yeah.
His son is black.
Right, exactly.
You know, he told him to be careful out there. That's what he did.
Top of the hour. Okay, we just break, we'll do this, and then we pick it up from there.
Okay, you've been listening to WPRK, Winter Park, Florida, the voice of Rollins College, and the Best in Basement Radio. This is Punkonomics, and we'll be right back with some more Punkonomics after a couple public service announcements.
Get our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.